Did your band start covering some Beatles songs?
We did a couple Beatles songs. A few, you know. We were more turning in the rhythm and blues, Chuck Berry, stuff like that, you know, a little more Knock on Wood, the Rascals, Young Rascals were an influence, you know, Midnight Hour, Wilson Pickett, things like that. So we were doing more of that kind of material.
All right, so we move along to your next 45, which happens to be on the B Sharp label. Did you cut a deal with Jim Lopez to have him put this record out?
I suppose Peter had something to do with that, you know. We didn't, but Jim Lopez, you know, he provided most of the bands, the top bands, with, that's where we bought our instruments, you know. I bought a Farfisa organ from him, and the pianette, the Hohmann pianette that I put on top. Joe bought a Fender bass, a jazz bass, from him. And our Fender amplifiers.
Now, did you change your stage clothes at this point in time?
You know, we started to go, when we first started with Steinberg, he took us downtown Minneapolis, and I think it was Minneapolis, and there was a place called Nate's. He bought us some really nice Ivy League Harris tweed jackets with camel vests and, you know, nice button-down collar shirts with knit ties and that, and brown and black saddle shoes and stuff like that. So we were very Ivy League looking at first. And that was pre-Beatle, too.
Right.
So as time went on, and, you know, the style started changing, you know, with the Rolling Stones coming in, and we started to wear vests and flowered shirts, more like that. And then, you know, along the way, of course, everybody went in a different direction where nobody dressed alike anymore as time went on. So, pouring on my first uniform.
Now, you're 45 on B-sharp. Was that also recorded in 1965?
Yeah.
And what can you tell us about those two songs? Who's singing lead?
Ramona was, Joe was singing lead. We had done that song for quite a while, and then when Rod came along, we picked up the tempo. His drums were great on it, just booming out, you know. And it was guitar, bass, and drums, and maracas. That was the whole track, and Joe singing the lead on that one.
So you're playing maracas?
Yeah, and then on stage, we used to switch around. I'd play bass, and Joe would stand up and play maracas.
And on the B-side, My Babe, is who's singing lead on that?
Yeah, I'm singing that, and that was the whole band playing.
Okay, and no background vocals on either of those songs?
No, just lead vocals.
This song comes out on B-sharp. Does Mona or My Babe get airplay?
Oh, yeah. Mona got a lot of airplay. Because Bill Deal had the top 10, Twin Cities top 10, Bill Deal's top 10 or whatever it was called. Mona was moving up there at the time. So it was getting quite a bit of airplay, which really helped us along a lot. You know?
So it was on WDGY. Did KDWB play it also?
Oh, yes.
With Mona being a local hit song, did that bring more people out to your gigs?
Oh, sure. Sure, the kids heard on the radio. TC Atlantic was becoming a bigger name. Some of the stations around the state, too, you know, like in Duluth, we started to get a big following, and the Iron Range. We did a lot of traveling in that time to bring in Bemidji and the Iron Range and the Purple Peanut and the Duluth, you know, auditorium armories up there.
What kind of vehicle
and,
did
yeah,
the band...
advanced our career having stuff on the radio.
What kind of van vehicle did you travel in?
We had a Chevy van. It was really a neat van. It was dark blue, TC Atlantic on the side. You know, it was a great truck. And most of the time I used to drive that truck myself.
You could fit the whole band in there and all the equipment?
We did. We used to pick up everybody, had all the equipment in there, crammed. Sometimes later on, Bob had a Mustang convertible he used to drive, and along the way, I bought a new MG, But that was later on. That was 68, I think. And MGB. So I used to drive that to gigs and stuff.
All right, let's talk about your next 45, Faces on the A side and Baby Please Don't Go. And I believe you and Joe wrote Faces, correct?
We did. We did, down in my basement. I remember sitting there, and we'd sit there for a long time just messing around and cracking up, making laughs, and then we'd get serious, you know, and we start. Faces was a very distinctive thing. I remember writing that. We were influenced by the Yardbirds at the time, so we wanted to do something kind of in that vein, you know. The psychedelic bands were just coming in, you know, like the Yardbirds in particular was, you know, the avant-garde of psychedelia, I think, you know, heavy metal. But, yeah, when we sat down, we wrote that, and it was complete, you know. We wrote that, and then we went in the studio, and I said, I'm going to run this piano, you know, through a fuzz tone. Arv, you know, he thought that was crazy. He goes, well, that's really a weird sound. You sure you want to do that? And I said, oh, yeah. It was a very much a Indian music, you know, influence, East Indian. It had that sitarish quality to it, you know, and so very neat. When I read about, you know, what people think of that record now, they always compliment, oh, the fuzz tone guitars, but it was really the pianet, Homer. Bob Wells played the lead guitar, and it was great what he played, but it wasn't fuzzy. It was a clear, more spaghetti western kind of sound he had on it. Great solos and stuff he did.
And what can you tell us about the B-side, Baby Please Don't Go?
Baby Please Don't Go, yeah. We were influenced also by the Animals and Them, you know, with Van Morrison. And both, I think, of those bands did Baby Please Don't Go. So that was just our take on that song. Yeah, it's really a classical blues song, but many people did. And that was the whole band on there.
And you are singing lead on both the A side and the B side, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And how did the radio stations react to Faces, considering it was more of a psychedelic song as opposed to R&B style?
It did have airplay. I remember, especially up north, we had the radio on in the truck, you know, driving, and it came on the radio. And that was really cool to hear it, you know, but I don't think they hopped on the bandwagon with that, you know. It was a little too far out, maybe, for the times. The sound of it was pretty futuristic for its time.
Did you play the song live?
We did, yeah. We played it live, very much like the record. You know, but after a while, I think we just stopped playing it. You know, I don't know why. Just kind of faded, you know. I often think, you know, if we had continued in that vein, we might have, you know, had more airplay on more renown, you know, more sales. But we never made any money on records that we did, ever. You know, so we didn't think in those terms. They were more like, you know, they would get you gigs.
So your next record, also on the Turtle label, is Shake on the A side.
Shake, yeah, Sam Cooke's song.
And
also done by Otis Redding. So that kind of stuff is a big influence, I think. Otis Redding more of an influence than Sam Cooke on it. He did the original. Yeah, that's the whole band, me singing lead.
And Spanish Harlem is on the B-side.
Right, Spanish Harlem, the whole band, with the whole band singing background vocals. Great song, you know, Benny King.
And did this 45 get you on the air again?
I don't recall Shake getting airplay. I don't recall that, you know. To my knowledge, I don't remember it being played.
Did you play a lot of Battle of the Bands?
Oh, yeah, we did. I remember one with the Del Counts, you know, and it was a big, you know, we usually did them in the arenas, you know, where you could get a lot of bands in there. The Mortician, you know, in the earliest days, before we became more popular, there was always battles of the bands around. It was really a common thing, but later on we just played so much that we didn't do that usually.
I know the Aldrich Arena had numerous battles of the bands. Did you play any of those?
Oh, yeah. Aldrich, yeah, we used to play there. I remember one was a battle of the bands, and B.B. King was also featured there, too. First time I saw B.B. King live was at Aldrich. Del Counts were there, too, at that time.
So that brings us up to a rather big production called 20 Years Ago in Speedy's Kitchen. And what is your recollection about that record and you ending up as the lead singer on that?
Well, that was Steinberg and Goldberg, Pollock, the two young writers that worked with him. Very, very excellent original stuff, you know. And Peter, I think he put the tracks together mostly. I can't remember if any of the band members actually played on that. I don't remember. All I remember is that we sang, you know, all together around the microphone, you know, doing these background vocals, mm-hmm. and there were strings on it, and it was a major production. And then, you know, I doing the lead vocal. It was like Steinberg would say, can you kind of sing it like John Lennon-ish? Like, okay, you know, I'll try to do something in that vein, you know. So he was kind of directing, along with Pollock and Goldberg, you know, they were great. I
should add that Dale Menton was also the fourth songwriter on there.
Yeah, Dale was singing on it, too. He had a lot to do with that arrangement. Very talented guy.
Yeah, I believe he did the arrangement for the string quartet.
Right. I think there were University of Minnesota symphony players that came in and did that.
And So your band, Bob, Joe, and Rod, they're all singing background vocals, but they're not playing instruments, correct?
Right.
Okay.
To my knowledge, I don't think they did.
And that originally came out on the Candy Floss label. When that first came out, do you recall that getting airplay?
Oh, yeah, right away. That got a lot of airplay. Yes, up north on the radio stations there, here, it was actually moving pretty good on different charts. The parent label, you know, seemed to always be interested in what we were doing, PC Atlantic. Even back as far as our beginnings, That'll Be the Day, Peter said, you know, London Parrot Records is interested in you guys doing a version of that, which we did, but nothing ever came of it. Parrot was always there in the background.
So they end up re-releasing the song 20 years ago in Speedy's Kitchen and with the same B-side, I'm So Glad. What can you tell us about the B-side?
Yeah, the B-side, I'm So Glad, was all the guys, TC Atlantic. Joe and I sang together as kind of a harmony lead vocal together. It was a pretty good record, I thought, you know, I'm So Glad. Totally us, you know, as compared with a studio production, but it was like us playing live, really. Written by Joe and I.
And as far as instrumentation, what instrument are you playing now as far as keyboards?
And I'm So Glad?
Well, just in for your live gigs.
Oh, yeah. I was playing the organ, you know, playing organ and electric piano. So I was using a Farfisa Hohner pianette. I'm sitting on top of it. It was great because it balanced on there perfectly. But along the way, I wanted to change the Hammond organ sound. I had seen, when I was young, I used to see these bands like Joey D and the Starlighters, and there was a band at the State Fair called the Tornadoes, I think it was. And I stood by the Leslie speaker, and I would just look at that thing and listen to it going, this is a fantastic sound. I love that sound. So along the way, I finally bought a Hammond organ. It was a cut-down model, M1, with a Leslie speaker. But it was easy to transport because it was cut down. The body was cut off, and it had flip legs on it. metal legs, and so it was easy to tote. And I bought it from Bruce Kennedy, who was playing around with different bands at the time. I forget exactly, but he wanted to sell it, and I said, I'll take it, you know? So I used that probably more toward the end of 67, early 68, started using that. And it kind of changed the sound of the band, you know? It's such a powerful instrument. I was starting to learn to play, you know? When I first started, I just came out of nowhere. I didn't really play. I was more of a singer that kind of jumped around on stage and stuff, you know, and pounded on it. If there was a piano, I'd pound on it. But after I got the Farfisa, I started to learn from records and things.
Now, I understand Peter Steinberg had you sing on one of his productions, a band that was called The Pygmies. And
yeah.
It had Orangutan on the A side, the B side, The Whole World Knows When I'm in Love. And that came out on the, I think, Mercury label.
Unbelievable.
What can you tell us about The Pygmies?
The Pygmies, yeah. The Pygmies, a studio group put together by Steinberg. I don't know who all the players were, but he had this track, you know. It really wasn't TC Atlantic, you know, obviously, and he said, it was such a novelty thing, you know, it was almost had parts in it like Surfing Bird almost, you know, and he goes, can you do this? And I go, yeah, sure, I'll do it, you know, and so there it was, and that, so I did the lead vocal on it. Other than that, it wasn't really a TC Atlantic record, you know, just, I can't remember who played on it, because I don't think I was there when all the tracks were recorded. And the flip side, same thing, but I think I remember going into the studio Jim Johnson was there. And Enrico Rosenbaum, you know, he was there, Rico. I think Jim had played on some guitar stuff, maybe on The Whole World Knows When I'm in Love, I think. But it ended up that Jim sang the lead on that, and Rico and I sang the harmonies. So that's the story behind The Pygmies. And other than that, I had no idea even that it was on Mercury.
Did you ever hear the song on the radio?
No. Never.